Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Today we're in for something different. We have Eric Robinson here with us. Robinson.
Yes.
And Eric is a former FBI agent. Is that right?
That is correct. 3 months removed from the FBI. When I was accepted in the FBI, I remember being 2 years old and I was giddy. I thought, this is amazing. And despite tedium and disappointment and frustrations over 24 years, I never lost fascination. I really get to do this. This is really part of my life. Despite the many downtimes, I did keep this sense of, this is very remarkable that I get to be here.
And what were you doing in the FBI? What weren't you doing?
That's about right. I started in Chicago, Illinois. I did narcotics investigations, gangs, public corruption and civil rights. Then I moved to the Toledo, Ohio office, and I worked organized crime, crimes against children, financial crimes, and then national security. So I've done most of what the FBI covers at some point.
What inspired you at the ripe old age of 32 to do such a change in career?
I had started out in Christian ministry for a number of years, and it seemed like the kind of thing that I wanted to do. I was driven towards this. I saw the benefits in working in ministry. And though I didn't know how to handle dealing with people's problems, so when they came to me with their life issues, I was burdened with it. And that resulted in me having stress-related headaches every single day for 2 years until I finally realized I can't do this anymore and applied for two jobs.
But how do you go from there to the FBI? Surely that's out of the frying pan into the fire.
I have a wife that's way out of my league. And so you got to take a shot sometimes at the pretty girls. And I thought, okay, the FBI would be amazing. I don't even remember what brought it to mind to say, I think I can do this, but I thought I'll give it a try. And this was in the nascent days of the internet. So I was filling out paper. I thought, let me take a try. This could be great. And I applied for one other job I was overqualified for. They turned me down. And the FBI said, hey, let's keep this going. And April of 2002 is when I came on board.
April 2002, when I started my first company.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And what a journey that's been.
Yeah, so I was chatting with a friend who was nearing retirement in the FBI, and he was remarking on somebody he was interacting with 25 years ago. And I was like, buddy, everything's 25 years ago anymore. This large period where that was the previous life, here's the FBI now, looking back.
One of the things that I do a lot of is I work with AI. Come out of the FBI as AI is really coming into its own. And I can see so many challenges day to day for people because of job and all the standard things that people are worried about, and so many opportunities for everybody else, right? For anyone that actually dives into it. How do you think going into this stage of turmoil that we're going into, how's society going to react?
Based on history, probably not well. Like any other tool, good people are going to use it for good things and bad people are going to use it for their own benefits. That's going to open up so much more issues that you and I have no concept of as we sit here today. the concept of AI being used by the FBI was coming into an idea of, hey, I wonder what this will be and how we might use it, but just talk yet. We've had computer systems, we've had sophisticated devices, we've had great judicial process and intelligent agents over the years, and yet it always comes down to it has to be person to person. Even if the Bureau adopts use of AI, it's going to have to still be used by people, enhancing what they're able to investigate and find out.
I believe that you can keep the human in, elevate the human to be able to do more human, and let the AI do the stuff that it doesn't need to do, then you can be powerful.
And you can see how when something comes out and it is just artificial intelligence, it's somebody saying, hey, make me this, and then walks away. It stands out as this tastes saccharine. This feels off
Feels wrong.
and it's not authentic, as opposed to give me something and now I'm going to make it mine on top of this.
Yeah, for sure. And it's that energy piece of building rapport and actually feeling what the person is feeling. Even if we're on the other side of a Zoom call, we can still react as humans. And yeah, what's it, 95% of communication is nonverbal, right?
Yeah.
That's some ridiculous thing. You must have some really interesting stories to tell us. So pick an interesting story and hit us with it.
I was privileged enough to work two cases throughout my career that were awarded with the Attorney General's Award. One of them I worked in Chicago with my partner Jake, that brought about justice for the city because 4 years there was a police commander for the Chicago police who had been torturing suspects. He and his team had been doing that. And that was in the 70s and 80s. And the Chicago police just brushed it aside. These guys were getting results. And the FBI did the same until many years later, we were able to get charges upon him for obstruction of justice and perjury. That was a case that I would say I'm very proud of having been a part of. Then there was a later case where my friend Sean had indicted three brothers from India, and they had been funding Anwar Awlaki, the spokesperson for Al Qaeda. That's illegal in the United States. You can't fund terrorists. Charges were brought on them, and the three were put in jail awaiting trial. Meanwhile, Yahya Farouk Mohammed decided he would be best served if he could kill his judge. And he told another inmate, hey, if I can get my judge killed, I think that I can get out. And now I can do some actual harm to people instead of just giving money. So he tells this man, I'm looking to see my judge killed. That guy comes to us. And I've had jailhouse informants, and they're not the most reliable. And many are just looking to have fun. So a lot of them just make up stories. Maybe they'll get something out of it. Who knows? And I didn't really believe this guy, but Sean said, yeah, let's try it out. And it's a complicated process to put recording equipment on an inmate, send him back in, and do it safely. And we sent him back in, and he went to the subject and he said, hey, you know all that stuff you said about killing your judge? Tell me that again. And the guy told him again. Now we had the guy who wants to kill his judge. And from there, we went through the process of introducing an undercover that he could call. Meanwhile, the informant was just some hillbilly, just some nobody, except that he did probably know hitmen in his life. He was confiding in him and trusting in him. They worked out plans to blow up bridges, create a terrorist training camp, and they even had a plan where if he got out, he could go to the Mall of America, a huge mall. And they would just kill as many people as possible. All of these terrible things, along with killing his judge. We had the undercover meet with him. They had a jail call, and he gave him the code word, which was, I'd like to buy some puppies. That would be a little unusual for a Muslim man to do. That was arranged. And then our subject had his wife pay our undercover $1,000 for the puppies. And then the undercover showed him this photo, which was the face of the judge superimposed onto one of my buddies. And so I remind him when we needed a 7-year-old Lebanese man to look like he was dead, clearly he had the body of that. From there, went forward, added charges, got 26 and a half years on a guy who had plans to kill many Americans.
So, going through all of this, you told us previously that you were stressed out by people coming to you as a pastor, and offloading problems. How does seeing the total low life of the world not
Yeah.
affect you in the same way?
I don't know, but it didn't. They were different stressors. One was dealing with people I cared about. A woman comes to me, she's on our worship team, and she says, a friend of mine, her husband, is having a psychic break, and he's going to leave the family with their four kids and run off with a woman he met on the internet. And that bothers me. So I don't just talk to him and go, okay, that's solved. Whereas the work I was doing with the FBI, they're stressors. And then the body says, I'm going to give you what you need to deal with it. And now we're done. So it just happened to be that these things that I struggled with previously did not have the same effect of the weight still being there. And I'll tell you, when I got accepted in the FBI, when I got that conditional acceptance that day, I just didn't have headaches anymore. So I don't know the science, but I can tell you that that was a cue to me that this was the right decision.
And does the FBI give you different tools to deal with stress? We, as business owners, we deal with stress a lot in such a different way because it's quite a lonely job for sure. People think, yeah, great, you're the top of the pyramid, but you're actually the bottom of the pyramid.
Where it all
You're
ends.
holding up the pyramid and I don't have anyone to talk to because your wife doesn't really want to know. You want to keep her safe from the problems. Your family doesn't want to know. You can't tell your staff. You can't tell your suppliers. That's a lonely and very stressful job. So I'm interested if the FBI has any secrets in dealing with stress.
You described how I felt as a pastor. I was the one leading. We had a decent sized church, but it was just me. And I didn't feel like I could talk to people because there was only so many people. I didn't feel like I could give an image of I'm not perfect. I'm not holding it together. And so much of what you're describing, I think, yeah, that was me. In the FBI, it's a team. SWAT is a team. Your squad is a team. And to directly answer your question, no, the FBI doesn't give you anything. We have employee assistance, and no one avails themselves of that. We have chaplains, and people don't engage with that. But what I experienced is that agents take care of each other. So we would tell stories, recounting some of those harrowing experiences, maybe small t trauma, maybe a difficulty, or reflecting on we could have been killed. And then they were survivor stories of, and yet we're here. And guys are laughing the whole time.
I
Like,
think that's a very powerful point you put in there, right? The place where we feel most connected as entrepreneurs is when we get into the entrepreneurial communities. I've got a small community that I run, brings business owners together. And when you go out and you meet other business owners that have the same problems, that sense of community is so important, right?
and I imagine that your stories that you share with each other are going to be somewhat similar, of telling of risk and almost failure, but success, or challenges overcome. And they don't have to be great ones, but down to the last dollar. And then finally, we had this. And those are survivor stories as well. And just speaking them out loud brings it out of what's buried inside otherwise.
Being able to actually connect as a human, right?
Some people journal, some people talk to a therapist. And for us in the FBI, we have similarly experienced people. And so we can just say, hey, I don't need to update you on what this looks like. You can put yourself there because you've been places like that too.
I have a ChatGPT or a Claude I can talk to.
If that helps you.
The strange thing is, and I jest slightly because it's not, you spoke about journaling. And I think I'm similar to many entrepreneurs, is mildly ADHD, maybe not mildly. You're always doing a million things at once, and my head gets full. Right?
Yeah.
I don't write fast, I don't type fast. So I've always found this barrier in being able to get what's in here out. Now I can talk. Yeah, and I literally do this exercise if I get too stressed out. Okay, I've got this problem, I've got that problem, I've got this problem. I'll stop for 2 minutes. I've got this problem, I've got that problem, I've got this problem. And I just talk it all out. Yeah, and now it's written down somewhere. Yeah.
Do you also find that along the way in doing that, you're now self-examining too? So not just record keeping of, I got to get these ideas, but by talking about it, do you find that you're also examining purposes and that go along with those ideas?
I think what happens is because I've got a specific protocol and I use, which is three, four, however many times it takes for me to get my head clear, right? I know at the end I'm saying to the AI agent, okay, now my goal in 2 weeks' time is to get this done. Of these things that I've thrown at you actually take me to that goal, which them don't. I know there's a resolution coming out of it. And the reason I do 2 minutes, 3 minutes, stop, let my brain sit. Because then anything that's below the surface comes up. It's like this, okay, it's coming out, it's coming out. When it's empty, then I know, okay, now I've got capacity to work. Now I've got capacity to carry on. So it's interesting. And I think in the same way, I know we're going on a bit about AI, but communication is so important, right?
Oh, yes.
Communication is everything. And we don't communicate very well, right? I think, yeah, we think we do. We will tell our wife or our partner or our business partner, or we'll tell them exactly what we're thinking, but we have all this context in our head, right? So we just say it. And they'll say, yeah, because they want to keep the rapport going. Yeah. And then they'll leave and come back and they've done the totally wrong thing. We didn't understand it. And what's really blown my mind is that AI is exactly the same. Right? I will just go, D-d-d-d. What it gives me back is rubbish. Then I know rubbish has gone in. It's actually helped me communicate way better with everybody else around me.
And then what I had found in ministry and then working in the FBI was I can express myself at any period, but then I had to not just be the one who has the information, has all the answers. That when congregants came to me and said, hey, I've got this issue, I don't just go, okay, here's some Bible verses and that's it. Those might have been the right verses, but I had to be open and curious about what they had to say. And that same issue came up in the FBI that I'm working with informants. They could tell me, hey, this guy is saying he's going to do this. I don't just take it as that. I need to dig in with them more, say, that's our starting point. What more can I get out of you? And that would be the same with victims and criminals, too, that I can't come to the criminals saying, I know everything. I'm going to try to draw them out and take them from a position where this is the worst point in their life that I realize this and I'm going to help you through it. And now they owe me. I'm going to be their guide through this because this might have only happened to you once or twice. I've done this 1,000 times. Let me help you. And now they've opened up and now we've brought it from adversarial to more of a conversation that is a familiar position to them. And then the mind tricks them to think this is normal. This is back and forth.
Yeah.
And now I'm saying things I shouldn't be saying.
And I think there's an element of vulnerability that comes into this that we don't like to do as humans, right? And I've learned that the more vulnerable I am with people, the more honest I am, the more authentic I am in what I'm saying and sharing what I believe to be my truth, the more they will open up to me and share their truth. And then we can meet at a much more balanced level.
Yes, applying it to that idea to what I went through, I am pretty sure what the truth is because I've spent months investigating. And I'm going to posit that as what I see as true. But I want you to now tell me what your truth is. And so even if I know that truth isn't true, I'm going to let you go because that's going to help me understand your mindset. Because if you're going to keep sticking to this, then I know you're not going to work with me. And it also might open up to me, all right, now I know what your defense is because you keep coming back to this one thing. And yeah, I might actually learn something too. God forbid that I'm open to what a criminal has to say, and now I learn more.
You must have learned a huge amount about people generally on both of these sides of the equation, right?
Yeah. And now, if I'm learning from my mistakes or I'm learning from what I did well, that carries on to I'm going to arrest a guy sometime in the future. And now, what I failed at here, I need to tweak that and try something new for the next guy.
So what does the future hold for you? You're a young guy. You're obviously, yeah.
Am I?
You just need to shave all the hair off and then you look like
Exactly. Get
me.
the gray out. I have written a book about the crazy experience of what happens when a Baptist pastor leaves the pulpit and joins the FBI. A guy who's never handled a gun before ends up joining a SWAT team and works on it for 15 years, telling that story and preparing for that publication in the fall. And then from there, trying to take what I learned through all those years. The FBI has given me a lot of good training and trying to pass that on to others as well.
The process of writing the book, how was that in terms of therapy?
It was. I have journaled in the past. I'm not a journaler. Now here we are where I'm getting to relive these stories. I always had that fascination of this is great to be in the FBI. And then at the end of my career and now after, it's wonderful because now I get to look back. The idea of being an FBI agent is so much seeded to one's identity, and it definitely was for me. So I went from being that guy to just a guy. But looking back helps. It helps in the transition to go, yeah, I get to talk to people like you and tell you I used to be cool. And you're like, yeah, great.
You're still cool. Yeah, I've literally, my book launches on the 4th of May.
Okay.
And it talks about AI, but as a thinking outside your brain is the name of it. For me, it was about finding my voice. I have 100 stories. I was born in Zimbabwe. I grew up in South Africa. I came to the UK with £400 in my pocket. Now I own four companies and I do a podcast. There's been a whole host of things there, but I could never get it out. I
Yeah.
couldn't write properly and I couldn't type properly. Right. But now I can talk it out. Right. And I just talked it out and I have all these skills that I didn't have before. And it was a very therapeutic process.
Did you map out how the book should be and then add pieces to it, or did you just sit down and just start talking it out?
I'm a learner. I love learning. And so I've done this program called the DENT program, which is Daniel Priestley. And one of his things is how to write a book. So they've got a course in there for writing books, and there's a book called Book Magic. Lucy McGrath wrote it. So I looked at that. I was like, okay, yeah, we need to learn some of this.
Yes.
And so I took Lucy McGrath's book and I put it into my AI and said, I want to write a book in a format something like this. So I was like, okay, fine. So then I said, oh, I need to do that. You need this many of these things and this many of these things and this many of these things. So then I spoke in my stories into the AI to go and put them in the databases over there. So I just put story after story in, and I've got 30 or 40 stories in there. And yeah, I sat down and did that in 2 days because I just went on a time basis. And then over the time since then, I've been adding to it and adjusting. And then I used the AI to say, okay, now how do I put this all together? How do I structure it? Where does it fit in? This is the message I'm trying to get across. Yeah, how do I put that together? So it was a really good learning process in what AI is capable of. I often say I've authored the book, I haven't written it. It's my stories, it's my words, it's my way of talking. But if I went out to a ghostwriter, the ghostwriter would have to sit there, write it down, record it, then they'd have to take it away, they'd have to massage it, put it into something that's consumable by other people. And this is what I've used AI for, to be my ghostwriter. It's been an interesting experience.
That's useful. For me, I was thinking, let me skeletonize this. Let me put all the parts down because I know otherwise I'm just going to be the guy who just sits and types. I sat down and I read, like you, I'm reading a book on how to write a book. I sat down at the computer to give structure. While I'm sitting there, I thought, let me just start with the first chapter. And then it just started going. Because the stories are there, and here's a story, and here's a story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, here's another one. I'm writing, remember these on the side. So many of these, like when the agents sit around and chat and they start saying, oh, remember that time we did this? I can take myself out of that and look at it and go, you guys have any idea how incredible that is? These are just simple things where we talk about, oh yeah, on this operation, remember this happened. And most people, most regular folks, if they heard that, would probably say, "That's amazing. I can't believe that." Or, "I'm sorry you had to experience that." And you're like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was funny." And that was our day life.
And that's it. You sit around the table with five people and you start telling stories and then it starts flowing.
Except that it was just me on writing the book.
I used AI to say, I'm going to tell a story, but I want you to ask me questions about what I'm missing from the story. So interview me. Yeah. I'd say, this is what happened. My partner, Laura, I've done some crazy things. I jump out of airplanes, go free diving, go ice diving, but I'll tell a story. I was run over by a drunken driver when I was 19. And broke my leg in two places, broke my arm, broke my face. I always used to tell the story in a bland way. When I told that to AI, it interrogated me on my instruction. I interrogated, what about this? How did you feel here? What happened here? And then I could start thinking, okay, this is what's missing in the picture. To the point that I wrote the first story like this and I read it out and I brought myself to tears because I'd never felt it like that. Right.
You know you're doing well if you can make yourself cry.
Yeah, for sure.
You're like, I
So,
was there.
yeah, I think you have to have that connection with your words. Otherwise, they're not your words. Yeah. Look out for it on the 4th of May. Yeah. If you want to know anything about AI, it's not an AI tool book. It's how humanity has to think about the power that it can bring us. You released a book, and now I see a course in your future where you train people.
15 years on SWAT, firearms instructor, tactical instructor. I've had the experience of working with local law enforcement, and I have seen how FBI agents get very high level of training, whereas the police, who are more often in the mix with people, get a lot less. And that's a gap that I tried to fill when I was an agent to help out and have things to pass along now. One of my favorite things to do when I was training the police was I would say, "Hey, guys, guess what I used to do before I came in the FBI? And if you get it right, I'll give you a patch." And only had one person get it over the years.
I've seen in the business world, there's so many missing elements in how you handle yourself. And I can't help thinking that with what you've been through, there's probably a cross thread that you can actually do something quite useful for business owners.
That's also a thought of providing some direction and security for how, from what I've experienced, what are indicators of threats? How do we mitigate these threats as well? I was talking with a few people from church leadership and security of so many things within religious buildings, the mosques, whatever it might be, that they're so focused on. Like the pastor's got to focus just on taking care of people. And yet, there are very soft targets, and threats can come from the side, and threats can come from within, and there's no preparation for, do we think ahead of time of what we're going to do if there are allegations of some type of impropriety towards this member or towards someone in the staff? And then people make poor decisions in the heat of those moments.
What's your, from all your years of experience, both pastoring and FBIing, what would be one thought you'd leave my listeners with?
So I was in my 30s, early 30s, late 20s when I was pastoring and then struggling with the headaches. Part of my process of putting off making a change was that I thought this was right. Part of it, obviously, was that I was afraid to make a wrong choice, that this is a calling, this is what I'm meant to do. How do I choose something else? And what if that's wrong? And so now, years later, from experience, from having repetitions in making poor choices, I think that human beings overestimate the harm that will be done if they choose wrong, if they go through trauma, if they have something like legitimately a poor choice. We will recenter and have a new life now in a different avenue. And we underestimate our resilience, the ability to snap back if something bad happens to us, whatever it might be. And from the years of seeing what has happened, what I like to say is I'm undefeated. I have gotten through all the things. Anything bad has happened, I'm here. Any stupid decision I made, I'm still here.
So make those stupid decisions because movement is better than no movement, right?
Yeah, you make the decision, and even if it's wrong, legitimately, objectively wrong, you come back.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Eric, and I'm looking forward to the book.
Thanks so much, Roy. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.